time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. This is our show for October 26th, 2019. Last week, I brought you the first of the interviews that I recorded at Peter Weigel's French Fender Days on October 12th. This week, I'll bring you the remainder of those interviews, along with a conversation that Brian and I had about our thoughts on French Fender Days and what a French Fender bike really is. Then, we'll go out to Philadelphia to talk with Bina Belinky about the upcoming Philly Bike Expo. It's the 10th anniversary of the show, and there are a lot of new things happening I wanted to discuss with her. So let's get back to French Fender Days for the remainder of the interviews that I recorded.
Hi.
Hi.
What's your name?
Mark.
Mark what?
Mark Elliott.
Hi, Mark Elliott. You took pictures of all of us.
Yes, I did. Big pictures, little pictures.
Big pictures and little pictures. So he has a Rolleiflex around his neck, and if you don't know what that is, look it up. And he has an 11 by 14, I don't even remember what we call those big cameras. What do you
view
call
camera.
View camera that he got up on a ladder and took a picture of all of us. So if you look at the French Fender Day pictures on Instagram or any of the other social media platforms, you're probably going to see this amazing picture. How do you know Peter?
That's a good question. I've known Peter 15, 20 years. I can't even remember. I mean, I ride bikes. He makes bikes. He's done restoration work for some of my bikes.
Uh-huh.
And
did you bring a bike today?
Yeah, I did.
What'd you bring?
I brought the orange 67-centimeter Jack Taylor.
67 centimeter. Well, you are not a short person.
No.
So was that hand built for you?
No, that was built for I don't know who in 1976. And I bought it in basket case condition maybe 10 years ago.
It is restored. It looks lovely.
Yeah.
I normally don't like to do the restoration thing, but it had a lot of rust and a cracked seat lug. So.
Aha. And you did all the restoration?
No, actually, it was one of the last Cycle Art ones, or a late Cycle Art.
Oh,
before
interesting.
They...
Cunningham's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very nice. Out in California. Yeah, it's a nice, it's a beautiful bike. I can see it from here. Besides the Jack Taylor, have you seen anything else here that you would covet?
There was a yellow Rutenz, also 67 centimeter.
Yes.
That was 60s era. And it's a beautiful bike.
There was also a yellow Porsche here that was quite lovely, too.
Yes.
Another beautiful
classic
machine, not necessarily bicycle-related. So tell me about your photography. Do you do this for a living?
I print and prepare exhibitions for photographic artists, galleries, and museums for a living, and I've continued to make my own work for almost 50 years.
So you actually print the film?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Where's your studio?
It's in Saxonville, Massachusetts.
So to do gallery exhibitions, you have to have a fairly big format printer.
Yeah, we can print up to 64 inches wide.
What kind of printer is that?
It's an inkjet printer. It's an Epson.
Wow, you do it as an inkjet?
Yeah, in my prior life, I did it as actual darkroom print,
right.
up to 72 inches wide, by 10 feet or 15 feet or whatever you wanted to do.
How do you develop something like that?
Machines, big machines.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I can remember working in a little darkroom and dealing with 8x10 prints was, black and white prints.
Yeah, no, big industrial machines.
Right.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
And then we do all the print mounting. And the framing and so forth, and the logistics. So it's a.
How big is the art photography business? Is it big?
It's big. It's getting smaller, it seems. But I think mostly it's less on an economic change. It's more of a technology change. I mean, digital, like you've got your phone. Everyone's making pictures. The demand for photographs to put on your wall is
dwindling.
It's getting smaller. Not hugely, but it is not. It's no longer growing.
Huh. Interesting. I wonder if it'll be one of those goes around, comes around things.
It might well be.
Yeah, because I think there's a big difference in quality. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah,
you know, a handprint is still a beautiful, beautiful piece of art. So I had another question, and it just escaped me. Oh, do you have a big collection of cameras?
My wife would say yes. I would say
we didn't ask
pretty
her.
Much have, I keep what I use. Like the bikes are different. I have more, the bikes I have a collection. It's irrational.
It's N plus one.
The cameras, it's more professional. You know, it's what I use to make my pictures.
Whose film do you use for a 2.25 square print? A negative.
I either use Kodak or Reelfilm.
There is still Kodak film?
Yeah, they still make Tri-X.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought that they were gone.
No, they did go bankrupt. The film is manufactured by whoever bought Kodak.
Okay.
I forget the holding company's name, but they still make it.
Yeah. Interesting.
And they still make it up to at least 11 by 14.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because that's what you were using today.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's expensive.
Yes.
The Tri-X is significantly more expensive than the Ilford equivalent.
Tri-X, that's a word I haven't heard in years and years. What's your favorite camera?
Favorite camera is an 8x10 Gandolfi.
Wow.
Which is an old British camera.
Yeah.
And two brothers made them for a generation, or actually several generations. I mean, just the two brothers. And the cameras were just exquisite.
Did they make the lenses?
No, just the cameras.
And whose lenses are your favorite?
It varies, but the older Zeiss Protars, which are convertible lenses, so you can make varying focal lengths out of a set of lenses. And but they've never been. I mean, to make a lens like that today would be so expensive. There's no air spaces. There are four elements in each cell that are all ground to fit, and they're beautiful lenses.
So, does anybody still repair these cameras?
The cameras, yes. There are there's people who build and restore wood cameras, and so that there are good resources there. The lenses, it's getting harder and harder.
Yeah.
Fewer people do shutter repairs.
Wow.
Yeah.
So for a while I had a sponsor by the name of Dodd Camera.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right. And so they were a little family-owned. They weren't small, really, for Cleveland. They were a family-owned camera business. But recently the family sold it. And
yeah. To who did they sell it to?
You know what? I don't know. But their decision was that, you know, they were no longer going to be working with me on the podcast, which was okay. It was an okay decision, but I just thought it was interesting.
Like bike shops, it's camera stores. It's tough.
It's a tough business. You're dealing with online. Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's been awesome talking with you. Thank you.
Likewise. I love your show.
Taking pictures. Thank you. Oh, thank you very much.
Yes.
I appreciate it.
Alrighty.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Hang on. Hi.
Hi there.
How are you?
Splendid. You?
Splendid. Good answer. I'm great. Thanks for asking. What's your name?
I'm Mark Finch.
Hi, Mark Finch. Where'd you come from?
I came from Zionsville, Indiana.
It's pretty far. That's farther than we came. Yeah?
Yep.
Claim to fame? What's your claim to fame?
Claim to fame. I don't know that I have any fame yet.
You're here.
Yeah, that's a good thing. It's a start.
So how come you came to French Fender Day?
Well, I really enjoy all these kindred spirits and cool bikes.
Did you bring a bike?
I did. I brought a Peugeot that I recently rehabilitated.
Rehabilitated. What was wrong with it?
Well, the paint was nice, but other than that, it needed a lot.
What model?
It's the bottom, the AO8.
Wow, I haven't heard that in years and years and years.
Yeah.
Is this your first French vendor day?
No, my first one was I came out in 2014 to meet Brian Chapman, who had made a bike for me.
Aha.
And I picked it up here.
What kind of bike did he make for you?
Chapman.
Well, there was a smart-ass answer. So tell me a little more about the bike other than that it says
it's a randonneur. It's like all these. It's got a generator hub and headlights and racks. And
nice. Did you find that having a custom bike made a huge difference for you?
It's great. It does exactly what I wanted it to do and has all the parts I wanted it to have.
Yeah. You thinking about getting another custom bike?
No.
Oh. That's from the once is enough category?
Well, it does everything I need it to do, you
exactly.
know. So I really, it's the one that does everything.
Did you ride today?
I did not.
Huh. Okay. We didn't either.
Didn't bring the Chapman today, though.
Oh. You did or did not?
Did not.
Did you bring a bike today?
Yeah, I brought the...
Oh, you brought the Peugeot.
The Peugeot.
The Peugeot. Yes, indeed. Indeed. So, when you look around the space, what's one of the most interesting things you've seen today?
Well, there are lots of interesting things, but this bike in front of me has some interesting features I'd not ever seen before. The kickstand built into the pedal and the combination lock on the chainstay are both pretty cool.
Yes, everybody seems to point to that particular bike and says those particular things.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, plus it's really close to the microphone.
Well, that's true. I'm not moving and it's not moving, so it just happened to be in a really good place.
And I've seen that mount for a flashlight before, mostly on Japanese bikes, but that's a nicely done one.
So do you think you'll come back again?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Will you bring your Chapman next time?
Well, I expect so, unless I rehabilitate something else in the meantime.
Well, okay. What do you do in real life?
In real life, I work at a wine shop.
Do you really?
Yep.
Are you a sommelier?
No.
Oh.
Just an enthusiast. Actually, what I mostly am is the graphic arts guy at the wine shop, and I also... I've been in the wine industry for 20 years. And
did you bring
capacity.
A bottle with you?
I brought a bottle of wine and a bottle of French cider.
What wine did you bring?
It's from Cahors. It's a Malbec.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I haven't tried it yet. I think I'll have to do
that.
I
think it's too late.
Oh, probably. Everybody's been drinking the wine while I've been sitting here working, you
yep.
know? Well, thanks for talking with me.
Well, you're welcome.
Enjoy your stay.
You too.
Okay. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll hear the last of our interviews from French Fender Day. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We're back. I'm Diane Jenks. Here are the last two of the French Fender Day interviews we did when we were up in Connecticut 2 weeks ago. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. What's your name?
It's good to see you. Johnny Coast.
Wow, Johnny, we've met.
Yes, we had a great long conversation.
We did.
That was fun.
Not too terribly long ago.
No.
You having fun?
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the same place we were when we first sort of met on the phone.
Right.
Getting ready for the Philly Bike Expo, except for now we're at...
French Fender Day. What'd you bring this time?
There's four or five of my bikes are here.
And
I brought three bikes.
And one of your clients brought one?
And one of my clients brought one.
How cool is that?
That's cool.
Yeah.
And then there's another one floating around, but I can't remember what it is.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, like, what is going on?
Yeah, right. Anything you see here that you didn't expect to see?
Oh, that I didn't expect to see? This, you know...
Everybody loves this, by the way.
Yeah. That's when... If you look closely at that bike...
Right.
There's some weird things going on.
Yeah.
Some, like, really neat weird things going on.
Yeah. We know.
Yeah.
That's his bike.
Oh, it's your bike, really? Yeah, we've been,
so
we were talking about it earlier.
So I'm kind of saving him for later because he has no idea that almost everybody who's come up to the mic, when I say, what's the best thing you've seen, almost everybody has mentioned that bike.
That bike, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of things happening there. Really
like,
cool things.
Like
yes.
The cool kickstand and the cool
kickstand.
Lock and the cool lights and all that
and
stuff.
And is that a double chain protector? Like, does it, can you adjust those?
The chain protector.
The slap guard?
No, it's not adjustable. It's original, a chain, a slap guard.
So there's a slap guard, but there's these two things that are adjustable, these metal things.
Walk over by
yeah,
there. No, you have to go by
thing.
The microphone to, so we can hear you.
Oh, the two adjustable things.
Yeah, what are... Is that also a slap guard?
No.
What is it?
The rear one is a chain hanger. When you remove the rear wheel, uh-huh. The chain will hang off that.
And the front one?
And the front one, that is for the lock. The lock swings, the wheel lock, right? You swing it over, and it clicks into it. So
I guess we're going to have to accompany this interview with a video, right?
Yes.
Because nobody can figure out what the hell we're talking about, but it's very, very cool.
You have to demonstrate it.
Right, right.
And then also, Peter's bike that he has on the stand inside there is a very interesting bike. Because looking at it, I didn't realize that John Williams had worked on the cranks that, and Peter had also, they both worked on them, profiling, fluting, and machining, and John Williams was the Derillium Survival guy, or Revival, Derillium Revival.
Okay.
And he made all the holes and lots of parts, and I used to send him lots of stuff to have him do his magic on, yeah, for my customers. And I got a chance to speak with him and do a presentation about our specialties at the Cirque du Cyclisme in 2000. Geez, I don't even remember 8, 9. And I got to hang out with him. And he was a really sweet, nice guy. And he passed away.
Yeah.
So it's neat to see that stuff.
Sure.
That he got to keep it, and I don't have any of the things he worked on, but to see it and like, oh, right.
You this know. Was John.
It's got some cool mojo in it, you know?
How long have you been building bikes?
2004.
Wow. 15 years.
Yeah.
Something like that. Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it?
I know. All of a sudden, here
right.
we are.
Right.
Yeah.
And you build beautiful bikes.
Oh, thanks.
They are beautiful. They are beautiful. I talked to him last time. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, so I don't know. Not much news going on.
No? You got any cool, like, commissions right now?
You know, a lot of Ronde Enduring bikes. I'm making one for myself at the very second.
Oh, my goodness.
I decided years ago to use bikes that I make for me as show bikes. So when the shows come up, I'll make a new one. And then I can do whatever I want. You know, it's exactly how I want. And that has, you know, one of my braze-on clamp-ons that I make for my derailleurs and... It's got a custom rack and stem and a super lightweight tube set and
nice.
Hand-carved bilamin lugs and it's got nickel-plated frame ends. And
you taking that to Philly?
Yeah.
Do you paint? I don't remember if you paint. Do you paint?
No.
No. Who's painting for you?
Carl from Vicious
yeah.
Cycles.
Vicious.
Yeah.
What kind of tubing do you use?
I use a lot of Columbus and I'll use the stuff that Jan Hein is supplying. Oh, very, yeah, Japanese light.
The KSI?
Yeah, lightweight, super lightweight stuff.
Mm-hmm.
1-inch top tube. So that's like the light, and to my knowledge, is the lightest 1-inch top tube set you can kind of get.
But he likes flexi bikes.
Right, or what do you call it? Planing bikes. Or what we used to be called lively bicycles. Right? So frame flex is all about tube diameter and wall thickness. And you have certain combinations that give you a flexible ride. And you have certain combinations that give you a stiff ride. And it used to be that all the sports and racers, sports, you know, riders really wanted stiff frames.
Right.
And I think that planing and that whole idea is sort of the same. It's the same idea, kind of rebadged and given back in a new sort of language, which is great and smart because it needs to be talked about, thought about. I'm a little tired.
We're all a little tired,
yeah.
But that's okay. Interesting.
Right?
Right. No, I totally get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it.
So wow. I'm, you know, this frame that I've made for myself is going to be a very flexible, lively bicycle, or AKA planing.
Carriers, front and back?
Just on the front. So the load is carried in the front.
Mm-hmm.
Handlebar bag, decalure.
So I have a question about your front handlebar bag. What's your... This is one of those geeky questions. No, your trail on that bike.
Low trail?
It should
it's
be low.
Low trail. So I have 60 millimeters of rake, 73-degree head tube angle, and it results very low trail.
Because our tandem was built like that.
Yeah.
Brian built it with real low trail, and we carry a handlebar bag.
So what happens is you put a load in the front, it actually stabilizes
right.
it, and it rides better, but it rides okay, too, without a load.
Right.
So today on the ride, I didn't carry a bag because we were only going 8 miles. But
so why would some people prefer high trail?
It's quicker responding. So this all stuff is very
esoteric.
Already figured out. No, it's not. It's already figured out.
Yes.
Like, there's no new information, really. I think there's people are looking at it again. But, you know, so it's quicker responding at higher speeds. And
it's the
racier.
Goes around, comes around.
Racier, sure. Yeah.
You know,
so
department.
If you want to add weight to where you add it on, if you're thinking about where you're adding weight on the bike, that's when you start getting into different kind of trails. That's it.
Right. That's all I have. Right. I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of geeky things people want to hear.
Yeah. No,
you know?
Yeah, it's always fun to talk about.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful to talk with you again.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Oh, no, thank you.
Nice to meet you in person.
I agree. Thanks, honey. Take
care. See you later.
Bye.
Hey, you don't look too sure.
No, I'm absolutely sure. I do this all
okay.
the time. Hi.
Okay. Hello.
What's your name?
Sam.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, good.
Okay, what this is going really well so far.
So far, it's great.
Okay.
What brings you to French Fender Days, Sam?
I have been coming here for at least 5 years, as long as Peter's been running the event. I'm actually a charter member. I was here with the original five people, I believe.
Cool.
One of the original five people, yes, indeed.
And you brought a bike?
This year?
Yeah.
I brought five bikes.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay, so among all the bikes that I see in front of me, and there are a plethora.
Yes.
Where are your five?
Well, I have a blue bike that you might see that's on kind of an aluminum box if you look straight out there. Yeah, over that way, there's a blue bike that's on top of a shiny metal box.
It's a mixedy?
No, it's a men's bike, it's a French bike.
I'm looking,
yeah,
I have to look through the mixie. Okay.
Like a light blue color.
Tell me about it.
Well, that bike I acquired in a trade from somebody in
it's
France.
Like baseball cards.
No, it's a bike that came up for sale on eBay, and it didn't sell. And I was interested in it, but I didn't want to spend the money on it, so I told the guy that I wanted it, and would he be interested in a trade, and he said he was. And we made a deal and he sent it to me, and it's quite a good bike. It's
what is the bike?
1966 Rene Ayres. So it's a good bike.
Who got the better end of that deal?
Well, I sent him a Rene Ayres also, so we kind of swapped.
So it was
good
like a
bikes.
Flat deal.
Yeah. So I don't know that I got the better end of the deal, but I think it was a fair deal on both parts.
So did you ride the ride today?
Did I what?
Did you ride with the riders today?
Yeah. I went on the short ride down to the river.
And did you ride that bike?
I did not. I thought about it, but I ended up riding one of Peter's bikes, which is...
Not too shabby.
No, not a bad bike at all. Not
yeah,
a bad
really.
Bike at all. So it was... his bikes ride pretty well.
So what do you do in real life?
I am a retired teacher. So I do whatever I want.
How cool is that? Cool
I do.
That?
I actually ride quite a bit, believe it or not.
No, I do believe it. Of course you do.
I ride as much as I can.
What did you teach?
I taught technology education.
Okay.
And, yeah.
You know they need you now. And now you're retired, and you're now
right.
They really need you.
How did you know that?
Well, because I know what the education system
okay,
is
yeah,
like these
Okay, yeah, I know.
Days.
They do, well, they've long needed good technology education teachers, but, yeah, they do need them now more than ever. I mean, in a way, I wish I was going into it now because there's a wide open field for where you can go as far as job openings. There's all kinds of opportunities and all kinds of needs for good tech ed teachers. So it's really many, many good opportunities. And yeah, there's a lot of needs. There's a lot of needs for good teachers out there in general, I think.
Right. I would agree with that. And
yeah.
I don't think I'll be one of them anytime soon. I'm too old.
That's actually my basic response to people that say, oh, you're a teacher, you have summers off, and they seem to imply that you have kind of a great deal going being a teacher. And my response is always, If you think it's a really good deal, you really should go into it because we need good teachers, and you should think about going into being a teacher because they need teachers. So please look into it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like my favorite is you own a bike shop. You must ride a lot.
Yeah.
People, it's like we work the same time you want to ride.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. You can't ride a lot. So where do you live? How far from here?
Just south of Hartford, right outside of New Britain, the Hardware City in Berlin. So it's probably about 30 miles. Takes me about 45 minutes, 50 minutes to get here. So I come down as much as I can to bug Peter, as much as he'll let me.
Yeah. So and, you hang out with Peter a lot?
Yep.
That's nice.
Yep.
That's nice.
So I'm pretty lucky in that way.
Did you meet anybody this year you had wanted to meet who you'd never met before?
I did. I met a Bill Humphreys, who is a former racer, and he was really interesting. I couldn't believe what some of the stories that he told me about.
Bill has some interesting stories. He's an interesting
so
guy.
So you know the name.
All you have to do is hand Bill a beer, and he starts
yeah.
talking. Yeah, and he'll tell you some amazing stories.
Yeah.
He did a book called The Jersey Project.
Okay. Well, I've actually bought a jersey from him, but...
There you go.
Oh,
Remember
I
the
wonder...
book? It's a hardbound book, and
okay.
it's got a jersey on the front. I think it's got a polka dot jersey on the front.
Okay. Does it show pictures of jerseys
yes.
in there? Okay.
Yes.
I think I might have the book.
Yeah, you might. And it is out of print, so either keep
okay.
it or covet it or whatever.
Okay.
If you're going to sell it, sell it for a lot of money.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know. I'll have to look at that to see if he's the one that wrote that book.
He is. Huh. If that's the book you have, The Jersey Project, that's
okay.
him. That's him. Yeah,
wow.
Very interesting guy, actually. He was he was here earlier at the mic.
Okay.
Yep. We had dinner together last night in Peter's workshop.
All right.
So, do you have a favorite bike that you've seen today that isn't yours? I know
well,
there are five of yours. But.
Yeah, no. I saw a really beautiful Jack Taylor tandem, and it had a really wonderful patina to it. The Jack Taylors have the lining on them, the box lining, which is really beautiful, and this one had just a great patina to it. And then there was a Rene Ayres Mixty that I liked a lot. No, you know what? It wasn't a Rene Ayres. I don't know who built it, but it was just a wonderful older Mixty. I like the Mixty ladies' bikes a lot for some reason. I don't know why. I just like the lines of them. Yeah, they really are. The men's bikes all look the same to me, and the ladies' bikes, I don't know, just have a really... grace to them that the men's bikes lack.
Right.
So.
Well, are you going to hang out or are you going to head back home?
I'm going to hang back. I'll hang out a little bit. I think I'm going to just kind of take in the atmosphere as much as possible.
Well, I appreciate you talking with me.
All right. Well,
thanks.
And I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay. Those were the last two of our French Fender Day interviews. I hope you enjoyed the series. I had a lot of fun recording it and talking with all the great people at Peter Weigel's annual French Fender Day. We're going to take another real short break, and when we come back, you'll get the perspective of Brian and me as we talk about French Fender Day, what French Fender bikes look like, and maybe a few other things. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
We are back, and here is the conversation Brian and I had after we got home from French Fender Day. The first thing you started with your flow of ideas, was about that French Fender Day is a celebration.
I think that is how I saw it. It's a celebration. You know, a whole bunch of people who love this kind of bicycle and this approach to bicycles getting together to celebrate together.
A lot of the bikes were old and a lot of the bikes were new. Did you see a lot of difference among them, or did you see a lot of old becoming new or new reflecting old?
You know, fine bicycles are fine bicycles. And we see and hear it all the time, or used to. We see, not as engaged anymore, but, you know, if it's not carbon fiber or aluminum and available in a modern bike shop, then it's old and heavy. And these things are just not true. You know, there's a lot of us who have 40-year-old bicycles, and they are absolutely exquisite relative to what's available today.
And yet there are bikes being built today that emulate that.
There are, but it is so fringe.
Well, it didn't feel fringe while we were there. That's what was interesting. It felt like there was this huge community of people, even though there were maybe only 150 people there. It still felt like there was a huge community of people out there who appreciate this. And it wasn't just old people. It wasn't just people in their 50s, 60s, 70s.
I guess the difference is that the people gathering there look at these bikes and appreciate them not as something quaint and cute from history, but as something that's still legitimate now and in no way inferior to what's produced now.
All of the bikes were rideable. Well, I think most of the bikes were rideable.
Yeah, there was a few that were in disrepair, but they were old enough and neat enough that their owner wanted to show them off, but
did you think it was interesting that it wasn't just builders who were there, that the people who brought bikes were people who just liked to collect bikes?
I pretty much expected that. You know, it's not, yeah. In fact, I don't even know. I mean, I know a handful of people there who are builders, but there's a lot of people there who I have no idea whether they build. I don't know.
Well, I know some people stepped up to the microphone, and when you said, well, what do? You know, well, I do wooden floors, or
yeah.
I'm an artist who photographs studios and buildings, or I'm an architect. I just thought, you know, well, that's interesting. And yet many of them have sort of put their hand on a torch that they've tried to do something, and yet maybe are not what you and I would call a builder.
See, I have no idea. I may have talked to a few of them, but I have no idea about that. What I'd be curious of is what they consider their everyday bicycle. If they are cyclists, presumably most of them, if not all of them, are, what do they ride on a daily basis? And my assumption was that most of them ride these bicycles.
I came away with the same conclusion, that several people walked up and I interviewed them, and they had either ridden to the event on the bicycle that they're showing, or they did the ride, you know, one of the short or long rides that Peter had that day. They commute on these bikes. it's really interesting that these bikes are still out there in their original form. In fact, I think a lot of people are really proud of them being in their original format.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With the patina.
Patina, that is what they call it. That's right. Define patina? I guess I got different ideas about that. What do you think that means?
Patina, when something, without looking it up, that's hard to define.
Well, and I think of the word patina, I think of something shiny. I don't think that's what it means, actually.
I think of something showing its age while still retaining its original beauty.
Oh, let's see what Webster says about it. That's interesting. Define patina. So patina is a green or brown film on the surface of bronze or similar metals produced by oxidation over a long period, which is what I think. Or it's a gloss or sheen on a surface resulting from age or polishing. And the impression or appearance of something, he carries the patina of old money and good breeding. So I think that's maybe closer to a definition that I could understand
the dictionary definition is, to put it simply, rust.
Yeah, it does sound like that. Oh, rust, nice.
But what we're saying is, in the sense of a bicycle, that patina is when you can see that a bicycle is old enough to have had plenty of use and been loved over many years, and you can see that because maybe it has a little rust on it, but it's not a rust bucket. It still looks beautiful and is perfectly useful.
Were there bikes there that stood out as sort of exemplifying that look, that well-used, well-loved, still-ridden look? Do you have a couple of examples of those bikes?
I don't. I really don't. No. I mean, I can think of a couple, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, there were so many bikes. I have no idea what was new. I mean, the new ones, even what I think of as new, still might have been 2 or 3 years old or 10 years old. I have no idea.
Well, that brings up a question for me. Do you think that some of the young builders, like a Johnny Coast or a Brian Chapman, and they're building in the tradition of the older bikes, are their bikes modern in a way that older bikes aren't? Or are they sort of trying to be true to the old way of building and showing bikes?
I saw a handful of bikes from both Johnny and Brian, and I don't remember specific details really about any of them, but I do remember one of Brian's bikes had quite a bit of modern on it. Quite a bit of carbon fiber, modern components.
Did it fit in?
Yeah. In my opinion, it did. I like that blending of what's appropriate from the past with what's appropriate from current. I don't like the idea of being a curmudgeon that, everything new is junk. That is simply not true. But to think that everything new and cool and lightweight and is superior, that's simply not true either.
So there's some sort of a blend that makes the right bike for you?
Yeah.
Well, when you are looking at building a new bike, which of course you are building new bikes right now, where do you meld that older thinking with modern, maybe, technology? Because that's clearly what Johnny Coast and Brian Chapman and a lot of these guys are doing, because they are showing up at a place where there are bikes that are way older than they are, for example. And yet their bikes blend in as being appropriate in that mix of whatever 100, 150 bikes that were there. And you're doing something similar to what Johnny Coast and Brian Chapman are doing. Maybe not the same thing, but something similar. what are you taking from old and what are you taking from new? I guess that's the question I'm asking.
Yeah, it's a good question, but I don't even really, I don't know. It's a great question. But to be able to verbalize it, I don't know. You know, we have little choice as far as modern components that are available to us. We choose from, you know, first of all, you have the customer who knows what they know, and what they know is for the most part what's currently available, or they want something that is most easily provided through what's currently available from Shimano or SRAM or Campy, or certainly occasionally aftermarket like White Industries, Chris King. And then we build in steel, and then you say, well, I want lugs. Okay, or, you know, I mean, you only have a few choices in how you're going to build it as far as steel goes.
TIG welding gives you more choices.
TIG welding makes it easier, faster and easier to incorporate really custom geometry, you know, tube angles and stuff like that. Fillet brazing allows the same things, but it takes a little more time and care. Well, it's different ways of putting that, but
that's okay.
That's not to say TIG welding is easy.
I don't think any of it's easy. Watching, it's like, this is impossible. I couldn't do it. I don't think I could do it. I know we've talked about that, but I'm like, nah, I don't think I'm ever picking up a torch. It's like me trying to pick up a spoke wrench. I don't want to do that either.
Yeah, I've said before, I think you'd be surprised. You could be good at it.
Maybe. I want to remind listeners, we were talking with my husband, Brian Jenks, and we're talking about sort of French vendor days, but we're kind of just talking about what he always calls proper bikes. I love that term. I love that term, proper bikes. And I see it used not just by you. I see it used by other people too. So are today's – this is going to be one of those kicking in the ass questions. Are today's – Treks and Specialized and Giants and all of these carbon fiber bikes not quote unquote proper bikes? What makes a proper bike?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, if a rider is happy riding their bike, then that's, I don't want to judge it as not being proper. I think what we like to call a proper bike though is, you know, what we like about metal, and in our case, especially steel, is that it's so much easier to incorporate things like fenders and racks, maximizing the bike's utility.
Oh, that's a great, I mean, that pretty much sums it up, maximizing the bike's utility. I mean, our bikes have fenders, when you put them on, our tandem has fenders, and we have wide tires, and we've got a wide range of gears. Your personal bikes are like that, and that's what you're building for other people. If you walk into a bike shop today, can you see a bike that has fenders and wide tires and a variety of gearing options?
Well, the truth is, I don't know. I mean, I can't. When was the last time we walked into a bike shop?
Well, that's true. That's true. But we see a lot of bikes when we ride.
Well, okay. So you and I went for a tandem ride yesterday afternoon. And on the trail, there weren't lots of people out. It was chilly. But I don't know. We passed a half a dozen bikes, maybe a dozen bikes. I don't think I saw a single one that wasn't, you know, this is on a bike path. People just cruising. And I think every single bike we saw was 23 millimeter tire, carbon fiber, or aluminum racing bike.
I saw a couple of people with sort of like hybrid style bikes, but they didn't have fenders. I didn't see anybody with a bell.
Yeah, I didn't look for bells.
Yeah.
But and bells
I didn't
are
hear
easy
any
to
bells.
Attach. No, I didn't either. I didn't either. But pretty much all skinny tires. And that's fine. They're out there enjoying their bikes. So, I have no business judging that. But, and it wasn't raining, so one can certainly point out that there was no need for fenders. But
lots of leaves on the trail.
Yes.
There were lots of leaves, so it wasn't all that safe in some ways. But I guess my question goes more to when you and I define proper bikes, it's a bike that could be used in a lot of different ways, from transportation to, I mean, you've done events with your wide tire, TIG welded steel bike that tons of people with carbon fiber bikes did. You finished the event and they didn't. And you were fine. People were talking to you about your quote unquote, look at that old classic bike, right?
Right. It's hard to imagine this bike actually performing, right?
Not to me.
No, I know. That was sarcasm.
Oh, sorry. I missed that emoji. But it's true. How many people said to you, look at that classic bike?
Probably a half a dozen. Yeah.
And yet, you crossed that finish line.
And yet, it's only a few years old, and yeah.
Well, back to French Fender days for a second. Do you have a fun story to tell? I think one of the fun stories was Amir. So, you know, we knew about, when you and I went to Israel, we knew about a guy who was building bikes in Israel. And you had said to me, I think at the time, I wonder if I'll ever meet this guy. And he shows up at Peter's, right?
I don't ever remember discussing it, actually.
I do. I remember you saying there's a guy. Oh, maybe it wasn't in Israel. But I remember you saying to me, there's this guy in Israel who's building bikes and he can't always get what he needs. And he's on the frame builders lists and blah, blah, blah.
I do remember mentioning that at some point. Yeah.
And yet he shows up. He flew in from Israel. Now, I don't know if he flew in just for French Fender Day, but...
He flew in for a couple other reasons, but he timed it. He intentionally timed it with French Fender Day.
Yeah. He was an interesting guy.
Yes.
And it seemed like you and he had some things to talk about, including figuring out who we were. That was a good story. You should tell that.
Well, we talked all afternoon, quite a bit. And then when we sat down to dinner that night, he and I happened to sit next to each other. I had been wearing my Hubbub shirt, but it was chilly, so I had a jacket on. And I also had a baseball cap on it with the Hubbub logo on it, but nobody noticed, I guess. Not that it mattered. But so we sat down to dinner, and I wasn't wearing my jacket. And at some point, about mid-meal, I think you were sitting across from me. He was sitting beside me. He turned and pointed to my shirt and said, well, tell me about... Wait a minute. You're that guy who does... Aren't you married to that lady who does the radio thing? And I gestured toward you, and the look on his face was just utter shock. He'd gone the whole day without, chatting with me most of the day, and with you doing these interviews and right next to us, and he had no idea who we were.
Which is just hilarious. And he sort of was like so flustered. He just couldn't believe it. He just couldn't believe it. It was really fun.
That was funny.
So I guess, we've sort of talked about proper bikes and we've talked about some of the people who were there. What was really cool to me about French Fender Day is how nice everybody was. There was absolutely, I could not feel one bit of jealousy or animosity or competition.
It's all about bicycles.
Yeah, but at NABS, we don't always feel that way.
Bicycles make people happy. Yeah, well, yeah.
That's true. Bicycles do make people happy. They do make people happy. They make me happy. They've been making me happy for years and years and years. Well, I guess we should talk again on this subject at some point. What do you think?
Probably.
Okay. All right. I'll see you later.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed the conversation Brian and I had about French Fender Day. If you're interested in knowing more about Brian's thoughts on French Fender Day and on the French Fender style constructor bikes, you can log on to www.artispin.com and read his blog. We're going to take another short break, and when we come back, we're going to head on out to Philadelphia to talk with Bina Belinky about the upcoming 10th annual Philly Bike Expo. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We are back, and as you know, every year we talk with Bina Belinky in anticipation of the Philly Bike Expo. This year the show is bigger than ever, better than ever, and has some really interesting new features. Hi, Bina. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining me this week. We are, what, T-minus 1 week? Or is that right? From Philly Bike Expo? Oh, 2 weeks.
Yeah, like 10 days.
10 days. Exactly. How are you?
I'm well. And yourself?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. So, you know, I decided to go out to the website, which it's just blowing me away how big this event has become. It's just amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I do credit you with most of it. Let's talk a little bit about some of the new categories and the exhibitors who will be there this year. You have a lot of new seminars and demos. You're kind of turning into this almost consumer and industry trade show. It's pretty cool. Who's new this year?
So we have over 200 exhibitors this year, and it was really fun to sell out early in the fall. But some new notable exhibitors, we have Rivendell coming for the first time, Wolftooth, Wahoo, also Speedplay, Rodeo Labs, Maxxis, and then a couple of new frame builders, Crumpton Cycles and Beardman Bicycles.
Wow. Yeah, the frame builder list is really, really enormous. It's huge.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, Brian and I were talking about this morning before I called you about this new initiative. I guess it's with SRAM, is that right? The women's kind of initiative?
Yeah, so that was new for this year. It's a new frame builder scholarship program sponsored by SRAM. It's titled the Philly Bike Expo Inclusivity Scholarship and created to support women, trans, and people of color frame builders who have been underrepresented at bike shows and in the bike industry overall. So that was new for this year, and the scholarship covers their travel, their accommodations, their build kit, and their shipping, which is provided by Bike Flights, and then, of course, their booth space. They're in a collab booth with SRAM, a big 20 by 20.
That is so cool. Do we know who won it this year?
Yes, so this year for our inaugural class, we have Pedalino Bicycles, Moth Attack, Sean Studio, and Untitled Cycles.
So wait, it's not just one scholarship. It sounds like we've got, what, four?
Four, yes.
Wow. I don't really need to know this, but I think it might be an interesting sort of tidbit. What is the scholarship worth? Forgetting what they might get out of it after the fact. But if somebody were to try and do all that on his or her, well, in this case, on her own, how would that look?
I think it was valued at about $30,000 for the four of them. So, yeah, is that that's math.
That's really, really, really cool.
Yeah, it's really awesome. We're very excited about it, and SRAM is building some cool content around it, so I anticipate the booth to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, probably. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Bina Belinky. She is the show organizer and director of the Philly Bike Expo. It's going to open November 2nd and 3rd.
Correct.
At the Philadelphia Convention Center. How many square feet do you have this year?
We have 104,000 square feet.
Wow. I think back to our time at that little armory thinking,
I know.
It's like we could drop that show in a corner of this one, right?
Yeah, we started, I think it was about 10,000 square feet there, and we had about 60 exhibitors. So we've definitely grown.
What year is this for the PBE?
So this is the 10th anniversary, so it's pretty special.
It is special. That's really cool. Really, really cool. You have some really interesting seminars, everything from women's bikes to triathlon this year. So a couple of the ones that I saw that I really like, you have one about the Gap ride, riding from, I guess it's the Cumberland Gap down to D.C.
Correct.
And then you have Richard Schwinn is coming in with Tom Ritchie and who else? I forget the other guy.
Mark Noblet.
Really a cool guy. They're going to be talking about some of the history, I guess, of bicycling frame builders.
Yeah, they're going to be talking about basically the explosion of American frame builders in the 1970s.
And goes around, comes around. Now we have an explosion in the 2000s, right?
Yep.
Right. So what do you think is a seminar that you haven't offered in the past that you think might really be of interest to listeners this time?
So we're doing, this is a new seminar for this year. We're doing advanced manufacturing for frame building. And that's going to be headed up by Julianne Petalino from Petalino Bicycles and Drew from Engine Cycles. Still really excited about that aspect of it. Obviously, we've had a handful of frame building seminars in the past, but this is going to be really interesting and, you know, obviously open to anybody who's interested in building at all, whether themselves or just interested in the craft of it. And then also we have Georgina Terry coming, and she's going to be heading up a panel on the big question now, whether women-specific designs are necessary. So
I wish I could be there.
I know. Me too. Tell me about it.
I mean, first of all, sort of the doyen of women's bicycles, you know, you want to hear what she has to say. And it is a controversy right now, and it seems to come up a lot.
Yes. Right. For sure.
I'd be interested. Who else is on her panel?
Anne Barnes.
Right. I remember her.
And then Kathy Rogers from Aerotech Designs.
Oh, I know Kathy. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And yeah. Then also Craig Calfee is on there. And then someone from, she's a Live Cycling ambassador. I'm drawing a blank at her name.
That's okay.
Right now.
Well, everybody can look online. We're going to give people that information before you and I sign off. And do you think there is any exhibitor who people will go, wow, I've never seen anything like that?
Many. I think there's going to be many. We actually have a lot of product launches this year. I think there's going to be a lot of that. I mean, Wahoo is, they just, you know, debuted their new kicker bike at Eurobike a couple months ago, but this is going to be the first time that it is seen in the U.S. We have quite a few product launches, things that are being shown for the very first time, but then also a lot of products that were debuted at Eurobike and now Philly is going to be the first place that they're seen in the U.S.
That's a pretty interesting thing, given the demise of Interbike, which should have happened a couple months ago. And now there really is no big trade show for the bicycle industry. And I think that we were headed in the direction of consumers knowing anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, ours is really like a hybrid. So it's a great opportunity, obviously, for consumers to come and enjoy and learn and shop, but also for industry folks to check out new products, talk to the companies, and, you know, it's a way to kind of do both in one weekend.
Well, let's tell our listeners how to get information, how to get tickets, when and where.
Sure. So the show is November 2nd and 3rd at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. It's right in downtown Philly. And you can visit our website for our tickets and for the full schedule of events at www.phillybikeexpo.com.
And once again, we've been speaking with Bina Belinke. She is the show organizer and the grand poobah of the Philly Bike Expo. Lots of luck this year. I'm sorry I won't be there. We will be watching all of the stuff that's happening online, though. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. You take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. My thanks to Bina Belinke for joining me on the show. Once again, if you are interested in getting tickets to the Expo, which is next weekend, November 2nd and 3rd, at the Pennsylvania Convention Center in downtown Philadelphia, you can log on to phillybikeexpo.com. Thanks again to my husband, Brian, for giving me some of his time to discuss French Fender Day on the show, and to all the guests who stepped up to the microphone when we were in Connecticut 2 weeks ago. I'll be back next week with a brand new episode of The Outspoken Cyclist. We'll be talking with international travel writer Phil McGow. He wrote a book called Swim, Bike, Bonk, Confessions of a Reluctant Triathlete. It will be published as we are talking. We'll also talk with Sam Wood. He's the owner and founder of Odyssey Bike Tours, and he has a tour for 2020 in remembrance of the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II. I think you'll find it a fascinating conversation. So thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a great week. Remember that you can always join the conversation on our Facebook page. Send us a tweet at Outspoken Cyclist without an E, or leave a comment on our blog, OutspokenCyclist.com. Stay safe out there, and remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.